You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again Ronald Peter Sturfo. He is a chartered market technician and a certified financial technician. In 2006, he began writing reports on gold. His 6 benchmark reports, called In Gold We Trust, drew international coverage on CNBC, Bloomberg, and Wall Street Journal, The Economist, The Financial Times. And for all of us who follow gold markets and follow gold in the markets closely and realize the importance of gold as money, we do look forward to this annual In Gold We Trust report, which Richard co-authors with Mark Valick. So I'm really happy to welcome Ronald Peter Sturfo with me. Thank you for joining me again, Ronald.
Thanks for inviting me, Jay. Good to talk to you again.
It's really good to talk to you, and it's really good to see the attention that this annual report that you and your colleague Mark are putting together. First of all, I should tell our listeners that your annual report In Gold We Trust is available, I believe, online. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think people can just simply go to ingoldwetrust.report. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's available for free in English, in German, and also in Mandarin, in a big version that's 350 pages, but also in a compact version, which is, 20 pages, just the highlights of the report.
Yes, and it's excellent. Both of them are excellent, I must say. You've pointed out in the past that currencies are based on trust. What gives currencies trust? Why do people trust currencies? I mean, the dollar has been trusted now since 1971, when there seems to be no backing other than perhaps a geopolitical military backing with a petrodollar. Some people refer to the dollar as a petrodollar. But what gives a currency trust, and where, with respect to trust, where do you think the world's reserve currency now stands?
Well, we write in the report that trust comes from repeatedly fulfilling expectations. And I think that gold, really over the last centuries, has repeatedly fulfilled expectations in good money and in sound money. So actually I think, this topic of trust was the leitmotif of the 2019 In Gold We Trust report. And the interesting thing about is that the trust is essential for us, in all different spheres of our life. When we go to a restaurant, we trust the chef. We trust the pilot when we jump on a plane. We trust in business, of course, our business partners and so on. But the interesting thing when it comes to trust, that it is highly asymmetrical. So you need decades to build up the trust, and then just within seconds, this trust can be lost. And I think that actually when I look at markets over the last couple of months, it seems that people are kind of losing confidence in paper money, and they want to allocate their capital in real assets. We're seeing it in commodities, we're seeing it in real estate, we're seeing it in precious metals, obviously, in the art market, also in cryptocurrencies to some degree. And this is a bit like Ludwig von Mises described when he wrote about the cracker boom in his fabulous book, Human Action.
So it's years of trust, but as you say, it can dissipate very rapidly. And yeah, maybe just get your take on Bitcoin now that you mentioned it, or cryptocurrencies in general. Where do you think they're going? Do you think they will play a part sometime in the future on a global? Well, they already are playing a part, because a lot of very large monetary interests and hedge funds and the like are invested in Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. But what are your thoughts about it, about cryptocurrencies as a playing a major role in the future going forward in the monetary system?
Well, I have to say that there's it is an extremely emotional topic. Jay, we know that gold is a very emotional topic, but when it comes to Bitcoin, well, that's even more emotional, and many people think that they have to have an opinion on gold and on Bitcoin, even though sometimes it's not really a well educated and researched opinion that they have. You know, when it comes to Bitcoin, I have to say that I started buying Bitcoins very early on. Not enough, as my wife keeps telling me. But I followed it because I think it's really from a from an intellectual point of view, it's really interesting, and the white paper by Satoshi Nakamoto came out basically as a reply to the great financial crisis, and I think that whoever invented Bitcoin, he clearly knew about the flaws of our monetary system. He understood the Austrian School of Economics. He understood how gold works, and therefore I think the biggest similarity between gold and Bitcoin is obviously the stock to flow ratio. So we like what's going on in this space. Of course, it's an extremely volatile ride. We've got two investment funds that combine traditional gold, physical gold stored in Liechtenstein with digital gold in a cold storage. And we actually use this volatility. For us, it's not an enemy. It's actually a friend. So we are riding options in these highly volatile markets, which gives you enormous premiums. So I think that's a very prudent way to play it. Jay, to answer your question, will Bitcoin be around in 5 or 10 years? I don't know, but if it should be around, then it would probably be significantly higher. So why not have like a 1 or 2% portfolio allocation in Bitcoin and in the crypto space in general? I just can tell you that I'm meeting very, very smart, ambitious, and hardworking people, developer, entrepreneurs in this space. And I think, you know, lots of it, of course, it smells like a bubble. It feels like a bubble. There's lots of rubbish business models out there, but some will really change the way our system works, and especially, you know, in a decentralized finance space. I think for traditional banks, that's clearly a big competitor coming up. So at one point, I would say, money is just technology, and therefore, if we regard Bitcoin as technology, then I think it has a significant upside. And I always compare it to, you know, you can go from point A to point B in a big, comfortable, safe SUV, but you can also, you know, get a really fast motorcycle. Of course, that's more volatile and it's much more riskier, but it can also be more fun. But why not have both? So our view is pretty much agnostic. I think that Bitcoin isn't the enemy of gold, and vice versa. I think it's really the fiat money system, and I think that you want to hedge against all those imbalances and bubbles that were created over the last couple of years. And I think that hard money is obviously the best hedge against it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's an open mind then with regard to these cryptocurrencies, because nobody really knows the future like that. But I want to get to your title, the title of your this year's annual report, In Gold We Trust, Monetary Climate Change. Exactly what do you mean by monetary climate change?
Well, of course, it's a bit of a, let's say, provocative title. But for us, it's just important because nowadays everybody is talking about climate change and sustainability and ESG and SRI. And, you know, I bought a six pack of beers, yesterday because we've got the Euro Cup coming up with, now in Europe, and that's always a good excuse for having a couple of beers with your friends.
Sure.
And it says, yeah, this beer is climate neutral. So it's really in all areas of our life nowadays. We're seeing references to ESG, to SRI, and all those things. But from our point of view, nobody is talking about the climate change that we are seeing in our monetary system. Nobody is talking about the non-sustainability of our monetary system, which is probably even more important than the other climate change. So what we describe in this year's report is the developments that we saw happening over the last couple of quarters, especially, you know, with the big tipping point being the COVID crisis. So the first point obviously is austerity is out. Nobody cares about fiscal conservatism anymore. The frugal Swabian housewife, I mean, that's what we had since the Greek crisis, especially favored by the Germans. This is over for now. I think fiscal policy is really, really taking over. But then we are seeing also, second point, the merging of monetary and fiscal policy. And if you follow the speeches by central bankers over the last couple of years, they always said, well, we've done our job. Now it's really fiscal policy that has to take over. And this is what's happening now. And then we're seeing quite a lot of new tasks for monetary policy. So if you listen to Madame Lagarde or Jay Powell, you know, sometimes I feel like they are working at Greenpeace or they are social workers, because it seems that they're really focusing on different topics nowadays. And I think I'm not criticizing it. I'm just observing it, but I don't know if really the mandates of our central banks were changed, and I don't think that the mandate of a central bank is to fight climate change or fight inequality. So this is clearly changed. And then we're seeing central bank digital currencies being introduced, which is the complete opposite, basically, of decentralized cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. But this is another sign that this digitized fiat currency system will be probably one of the next steps of financial repression. And I think another important point is this new ice age between the East and the West. So those are five topics where we say that they're really crucial to understand. And why is it so important? I think if you have a look especially at fiscal policy and the consequences for inflation, it is obvious that fiscal policy has a more direct and a much faster impact on the economy and on the inflation compared to monetary policy like quantitative easing, where you basically try to stimulate the economy via the banking system. So those are the main points that we're describing. But as you've said, it's 350 pages. So that's only a very, very short summary of of all the topics in the report.
I think you've just answered the next question I was going to bring up. If I remember last year, you were probably more of a deflationist, or at least you had this view of the dangers of deflation. Clearly, it seems, and for reasons I think you've just explained, you're more concerned now about inflation. Consumer inflation, I think we've always had, you and I would probably agree that we've had massive amounts of inflation in asset prices and stock
yes.
markets and real estate and so forth, but we haven't seen it at the consumer level. Now, if we have helicopter money that is being showered upon the populace, massive millions of people getting checks in the mail or checks in their bank account, it certainly would have that sort of Keynesian effect of demand, stimulating demand more than just the monetary policy. So I guess that's your answer. That's why you're more concerned now about inflation. It seems clear to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we all know, as a student of monetary history, that our debt-based monetary system has to avoid deflation, whatever it takes. So it is an inflationary system. However, deflationary forces were quite strong, and they're still around. I mean, uh-huh. Technology, of course, but also the debt levels. They're also a big deflationary factor. But I think now the inflationary factors are just stronger than the deflationary ones. Now, of course, the Fed keeps telling us, and I once said in an interview, I think they're listening to Guns N' Roses at the Federal Reserve, because they just keep telling us all we need is just a little patience. But, you know, I think it's not transitory, and we shouldn't be too patient, because it is really a structural change that we are seeing when it comes to inflation and how inflation is created. A couple of thoughts on that. The biggest drivers probably are, well, velocity has collapsed over the last couple of months. Now with economies opening up again, I see velocity stabilizing, and it will start to rise, and will meet an enormous amount of liquidity that was created over the last couple of quarters. Then we're seeing that Asian countries are now starting to export inflation rather than deflation. Hmm. From our point of view, now we're seeing a bounce in the US dollar, but structurally we see a weaker US dollar. Then we see demographics are slowly turning inflationary. That's a very, very interesting chapter in our report. We're seeing increasing geopolitical tensions between the U.S. and China and U.S. and Russia. So we could really be at the beginning of a second Cold War. We're seeing, and this is going to be a very, very important topic over the next couple of months, rising wages. In many, many industries, we are now seeing a real shortage of labor, especially for skilled labor. We're seeing rising minimum wages. We're seeing rising unit labor costs. So a return of wage inflation might really be on the horizon. And then lastly, I think we should not forget, I think people focus too much on the Federal Reserve. We should focus more on the White House. I think that big government is back, if we like it or not. So we should listen much more to politicians, what they've got in mind with fiscal policy. I think they like the job, that they like the fact that now everybody wants to see big government coming back, and, you know, more stimulus, and we're getting used to it, and we know that that there is a tremendous declining marginal utility of those programs. So we always need more and more, and it's like a sugar rush. So if you drink like two Red Bulls, of course you will see an effect, yeah, and you will see this effect quickly, but it fades off and you won't feel better afterwards. So I think those are the main inflationary drivers. And it's interesting, because over the last couple of years, they always told us, well, we need more inflation. Now it is here. But now they keep telling us, no, it's only transitory.
Yeah,
this
right.
is the excuse to continue to be dovish. So, yeah, that's a pretty interesting constellation that we're now seeing, I would say.
Yeah, I have to ask you about the mining sector, this gold and silver mining sector, for example. Those industries, those mining companies have generally done well during deflationary times, when their costs, when the price of their metal, of gold and silver, is rising faster than their costs. Now, what happens now, Ronald, if we're, you know, and I believe you're right, I think this is not transitory, that we are in a rising inflationary environment for the reasons you just talked about. But do you have a sense of what that might mean for the mining industry, for gold mining companies? My sense is that if the costs are going up, you're probably going to be looking at higher grades, potentially, and generally speaking, low energy costs. But labor costs are going up, too. We're seeing that in various ways, various areas in the mining sector, I know. But I would just like to hear your comments on how you think a rising inflationary environment might impact the gold and silver mining space?
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, on the cost side, it would have an impact. You'll see it with fuel, obviously, which is, you know, oil is one of the main drivers for on the cost side. We're seeing it with explosives, probably also with labor and so on. However, I mean, we crunched the numbers and analyzed what has the biggest inflation beta. So what works in an inflationary environment? And it starts with commodities, then gold, and then the mining space. So if you think that inflation is becoming a topic, then I think we should do very, very well with mining stocks. And, you know, just for the sake of comparison, the total market cap of the companies in the HUI index, the gold bugs index, which includes the 20 largest unhedged precious metals producers, it's now at the moment it's 180 billion, which is equivalent to I think 0.5% of the total market cap of the S&P. Just the valuation of Apple is currently 10 times the total market cap of the HUI. So I think, you know, that the mining space had the most profitable year in history last year. We saw gold prices were rising and all-in sustaining cash costs were basically flat. This year should be at least as good as last year. And you know, I had like 120 company meetings last year. This year already had 50 meetings with company representatives. And I can tell you those companies are doing a tremendous job at the moment. They are producing enormous amounts of free cash flow. They really care about their shareholders. They're doing share buybacks. They're increasing their dividends. We're seeing lots of positive developments in the junior space. So for me, really, it's terrific. I'm seeing lots of great opportunities and sometimes I really feel like as a value investor in the mining space and I think, you know, it's been a tough space to invest in over the last couple of decades, but now I think it's fantastic, and we don't need a gold price at 2,500 for those companies to make really serious money. They are now, some of them are real cash flow machines at the moment, and still, I don't see really a lot of interest coming in from market generalists.
That's right. So do you think the mining companies, the big guys, have done a better job of controlling costs than they have in the past? I know in the past when you have a bull market in gold, a lot of times the big guys go out and overpay too much for the juniors that are discovering the gold or the silver or whatever the metal is. And do you think that they're maybe better managed now, the major companies, than they were at some times in the past?
Yeah, I think so. I think they are better managed. I think they also improve their communication. From what I sense, we are seeing institutional players like endowment funds, but also pension funds coming in. I don't really see the big retail money coming in, and I think that the big move by generalist investors, it hasn't really happened. Last year when Berkshire Hathaway announced that they were buying a stake in Barrick Gold, which was only a very short love affair, I think that created lots of interest from many investors. But I think, you know, we just should take this opportunity, and at some point I think markets will realize that there's lots of value in this space. Not only on an absolute basis, but especially on a relative basis. So, and then if you combine that with a good outlook for gold and silver, which we obviously have, then I think that's pretty much of a sweet spot that we're seeing.
Just a couple of minutes left yet, Ronald. I'd like to ask you to maybe a general comment on, you know, you point out that history rhymes. It's never exactly the same. What period of history are we currently rhyming with?
Well, that's a great question, Jay. Perhaps it's a bit like the 1960s and the the 1970s, perhaps beginning of the 1970s. I mean, I wasn't alive back then, but from what I've read, perhaps it's a bit similar to, you know, 1963 to 1970 in the US, we had this guns versus butter debate. Guns were referring to the Vietnam War and butter to Lyndon B. Johnson's Great Society programs. And it, in the end, it wasn't guns or butter. It was guns and butter. and now it seems a bit similar. I mean, we're fighting wars against a health crisis, against climate change, and still against terrorism. And then, of course, there's, you know, the big enemy from China approaching. But then on the other hand, you know, I think there's all those government handouts, I think they will continue. So it is definitely guns and butter now as well. And we know what happened in the 1970s. So, you know, it won't turn out exactly the same way. But I think, and you know, taking a step back and not really focusing on the daily noise, you know, the debt piles were already pretty high before the COVID crisis. Mm-hmm. Now they're even higher, and they're significantly higher. So just in the US, the debt per capita, it rose 25% last year.
Yeah.
Just in 1 year, which means that the flip side of that is that a big move in interest rates is probably impossible. So if there should be rate hikes, I think it will be a very, very short campaign, because we simply cannot afford it anymore. So from my point of view, we will have to see negative real rates over the next couple of years. And that should really be the foundation for this bull market in gold. And, you know, Jay, if you would tell me, well, I see real rates at plus 3-5%, then yeah, I would say, well, then you have to sell all your gold. Mm-hmm. Just get rid of it. But I just don't see it. I really don't see it, and I've got no idea how that should happen. And that's basically the foundation for our positive stance on gold. Now that inflation is really, really back, everybody says, well, it's not here, and you know, it's only transitory, and it will be it's yeah.
Well, you know, Ronald, I am old enough to have remembered. I was a very young man in the 1970s. In fact, I remember very well 1971, August 15th, reading in the New York Times that Mr. Nixon was temporarily removing gold from the monetary system. But I hear what you're saying, and I must agree. I think I see a lot of similarities with that. The whole idea that it was transitory, there's no reason to worry about inflation, and yet the Federal Reserve chairman of that time, Arthur Burns and G. William Miller, were pumping money into the system like there was no tomorrow. And yeah, I think that's a good analogy. I know there are people that disagree with that, but I do want to thank you, Ronald. We're out of time. I think it's just excellent. People that really should read this, if they're serious investors, they need to understand the reason why gold is going up. And really, gold is going up because the currency is going down. I think you would probably agree with that, that we really it's really a story of replacement of currency and a loss of confidence that you talked about, trust. We still, most people still trust the dollar for sure, and it's still, yes, the world's reserve currency. But as you say, that can change very, very rapidly. So,
and you can be married to your wife for 50 years, and we're celebrating, you know, 50 years of the end of Bretton Woods. But then you come home from work a little bit earlier, and you meet your wife with your neighbor in bed. So that trust is gone. it can happen quickly.
Well, I hope it doesn't happen to you or to me. But in any event, I get the message. It does happen. That's for sure. And we know that monetary systems go to the dustbin of history, as they say. So, Ronald, I want to thank you so much for spending time with us. And I really want to suggest to our listeners that they go to ingoldwetrust.report. and read this, either the abbreviated one or the longer one. It's very much worth investing the time to do so. So thank you very much, Ronald, for being with us again.
Thank you very much, Jay. It's been a pleasure. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, that is all the time we have for this week. Next week, my guests will be Michael Pembroke, He's a former New South Wales Supreme Court judge and author of a new book titled America in Retreat, The Decline of U.S. Leadership. Another Australian, Michael Hudson of Hannon Resources, will join me to discuss that company's massive silver-copper discovery in Peru. And Michael Oliver will be here as well. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
NV Gold Corporation, trading under NVX on the TSX and NVGLF on the OTCQB, is a gold exploration company focused on uncovering the next multi-million ounce gold deposit in Nevada. With an aggressive exploration season ahead in 2021, a tight share structure, strong management ownership, key strategic investors, a globally recognized technical team, report coverage from industry gold experts, and a strong treasury. Visit NVGoldCorp.com to learn more on this exciting story.